And you haven't lost anything. So it's just about starting. We were turning around and praising God with, you know, Joe Metal right there. And I hope that you were dancing to it too, because I really was. And that really charged me up for the morning. But once again, you're welcome. A very big thank you to our partners, Amasha. Sorry, Amasha Partners Limited and IK. Dano Milk, choose tasty milk, choose nourishment, choose Dano Milk. Dano Milk, go for it. And Vitamilk, indeed, a nutritious beverage that feels good anywhere, anytime. As we progress, I will be telling you the details of what our sponsors are offering us. And this morning, I just want to simply encourage you that all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. If you have the courage to pursue your dreams and you don't just sit and imagine and, you know, go into wishful thinking, they have the potential and the tendency of really coming to pass. And as you journey along this weekend and into the new week, remember that when you can't control what's happening, challenge yourself to control the way you respond, because that's where your true power lies. You may not be able to control the things that are happening because they may not be dependent on you, but what is totally dependent on you is how you respond. You have the power to, you know, take care of that. So if you have the courage to pursue your dreams, they can come true. And you also have the power to respond to whatever may be happening around you. And how you respond is totally your choice. Once again, good morning, Daniela. Thank you for production. Jojo NT is interacting with you on social media at Joy997 across platforms, live on Facebook and on YouTube on our behalf. And my guest is seated, Lawyer Kwekuyamua Pencil. He's a family life counselor. He's a lawyer. He's a reverend minister. You know, everything in one. And when we have him, I always say that we have the full package when we have Lawyer Pencil. Lawyer Pencil, good morning. You're welcome.
Good morning.
In fact, Daniela just said Happy New Year to you. I am so surprised. Like, this is the first time we're engaging you this year. Oh, I know. Daniela, are you sure?
It is.
Really?
It is.
Wow.
Right.
In the second quarter.
It is well.
Oh, Lawyer Pencil, then you are in trouble.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, you're welcome.
Thank you.
We hope the family is doing well.
Very well.
Beautiful. Yes. This morning, we have another session with, you know, I mean, call it a time with a lawyer, but your marriage and the law.
Yes.
And we have some specific things we will be discussing. And you will also send in your questions, your thoughts, your contributions and comments. 055-1111-997. And maybe we will be able to activate the phone lines on 0302-216541. So you would like to put that on speed dial so that when we activate it, you are able to call in and ask your question. But of course, on 055-1111-997, it's our WhatsApp. You can start sending your questions through. We have, you know, we have our email is homeaffairs@myjoyonline.com. And every once in a while, when we go into check, you have questions. You have people sending you their stories. They have people, you have people sending you what they are going through. Sometimes we read them as they are, and there are times too we just couch conversations out of it so that a lot more people can benefit. And that's sparking one of these, that is what is sparking this conversation this morning. As much as possible, we want to have conversations that are very beneficial to your homes, because this is Home Affairs. But before I get into it, I have have a very, 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 very important announcement to give. So let me give you the opportunity to draw closer to your radio. Get closer. Are you getting closer? A little bit more closer. Okay, great. I can tell that you're closer now. Now, for the next 4 weeks, from today, next week, the week after, and the other week after, we have some very wonderful honeymoon packages to give out. Can I hear? Yay! I know you're doing that. Honeymoon packages. Somewhere around August, our single summit, Becoming Mr. and Mrs., will happen. But this year also, we're going to be focusing on people who are planning to get married, because we have established on this show several times that most of the issues that happen in marriages and because we don't discuss them well enough before we plunge into the marriage. So Becoming Mr. and Mrs. will be coming off in August. We will keep you updated when we're getting there. But this week, next week, the week after, and the one that follows, we have honeymoon packages. Guess where we're taking you? So here's the deal. If you have a friend who is getting married next Saturday, or you know somebody, the person could be a family member, a friend, a loved one, just somebody that you think deserves this, right? What you have to do is, and make sure that they are ardent listeners of Home Affairs, okay? This is also a reward for our very, special listeners. You don't have to send in the message if you are getting married. Somebody will have to do that on your behalf, okay? So you just drop us a message, your name. The name of the person getting married could be the name of the man or the woman, and then add your contact to it. We will contact you and do the rest of all the skirmishes with you. We've done this before. So next week, we will send their package to them whilst they are preparing to surprise them. Maybe they have booked their honeymoon already. It's fine. But this is another one that we are giving them. Like I said, guess where we are taking them to? Lou Moon. Yes, if you have ever heard of Lou Moon, that's where we are taking our friends who are getting married between now and the next 4 weeks too. So start looking through your contact, your phone, and find out who is getting married, especially next week, and then send the details to us. We will contact you and do all the underground work. And then Saturday morning, we would like to deliver this especially to the lady while she's, preparing and everything. She gets, a dispatch rider arrives at their door, and then, this whole package and other things are delivered to them. So that's the good news I have for you. You want to make somebody happy. You want to surprise them. They could go on their honeymoon and come back. This will wait for them. Any day they choose, any weekend they choose within the year, they will be able to, use it. So that's the good news that we have for you. But now let's get into our conversation. Is it illegal to start dating after a separation? How do I take custody of my kids in a divorce situation? Who is entitled to alimony after a divorce? And these and other legal questions on marriage is what we are doing on Home Affairs this morning. And we're glad to have lawyer Kwikuya Mwapensel, who is a lawyer, family life counselor, and a reverend minister, handling this for us. He has done it excellently over the period, and that's why we keep going back to him. So lawyer, once again, you're welcome, and we are on to the conversation now.
Thank you.
Great. So is it illegal to start dating after a separation?
Separation as we know it generally, which is the putting away of a husband and a wife during the course of a marriage, is not recognized under our laws in Ghana.
Mm.
So whenever you talk of separation, under our laws of marriage and divorce, living apart for a minimum of 2 years provides a ground for divorce in Ghana if both parties consent to it. that would have conserved the other. But if you live apart for 5 years, that to say, if you live apart for 5 years, then either party can go to court and automatically seek a divorce on the basis of separation. So separation in the context of a marriage is not recognized in Ghana. In other words, you can't, as a result of some disaffection or some differences between husband and wife, go to court and legally require the court to separate you, which is a legal phenomenon in other jurisdictions. But in Ghana, it is not part of our law. Separation is only recognized within the context of a divorce, when, like I said, the parties have lived 2 years apart. With the consent of the other, you can seek a divorce. Or if they've lived 5 years apart, then automatically either party can go to court and seek for a divorce on the basis of that separation.
I see. This is interesting.
Yes.
So, and so for the many times that, I mean, you know, counseling in Ghana here largely is done by, if you are a Christian, then it is usually done by the church.
Yes.
A few people will go out of their way to engage other professionals to counsel them in different areas before they get married. Yes. But most of the churches will recommend 3 to 4 months of counseling.
Yes.
And so when it comes to keeping the marriage together, largely, it depends on the church and the counselors, because when you have issues, most of the time they are taken back to the church counselors to do post-marital counseling.
Yes.
And I know of a number of them, I'm sure Leah Pencil, you know too, about sometimes the counselors asking the couple to stay apart for a while so that everybody can breathe and then make the decisions and come back. So what we are saying is that that decision that usually church counselors will make married couples take is illegal.
I wouldn't say it's illegal, but it cannot form a basis for seeking a relief in court.
No, we're not even talking about a relief in court. I want us to talk about the bit about the
separation. No. It's practical, common sense, because practical is common sense. It helps the parties to hear themselves. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good use that
but it does not have a place in law.
It does not have, in other words, unlike other jurisdictions, let me explain it this way. In other jurisdictions, the court can legally separate the parties. In other words, you can go to court and request for a separation order, and the order will be made on terms that you have to live apart for this number of years, and these are the provisions in terms of maintenance, in terms of child custody,
and that is not divorce.
And that's not divorce, that's separation. But that's recognized by law. In other words, a judge can sit in court and make those orders. But even in those situations, the parties have to caution themselves. Because if even you are separated by an order of court, there are many things you cannot do. There are many things you cannot do. Because the separation itself is within the context of a marriage.
Yes.
Recognized by law. So, for instance, within the context of that separation, you cannot have an affair, adultery, with other party. Because once you do it, it will precipitate the dissolution. I mean, that's even by law. But I'm saying that our laws in Ghana do not recognize separation within the context of a marriage. The only context in which separation is recognized is for purposes of seeking a dissolution of the marriage. And so if you have lived apart, however, whatever the terms under which you lived apart, if you lived apart for 2 years, then you require the consent of the other party to have the court dissolve the marriage. But if the parties have lived apart for 5 years or more, then either one can just go into the court and ask that the marriage be dissolved on the basis of living apart. That's the separation for 5 years. That's a fiscal separation. It wasn't by a court order. So that's the distinction. Separation by a court order exists in other jurisdictions, but not in Ghana. So you can't go to court and say, but for this reason, A, B, and C, we want an order of the court for us to live apart and for the man to perform these other functions. I say the man because always the man. But let me put or for the other spouse to do this and to do that. In Ghana, you can't do that. The only time that you can come to court and rely on the physical act of living apart, which is a separation, is within the context of a divorce proper before a court of law.
Okay, but you mentioned earlier that a judge can also, institute a separation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially so if it is maybe, I know there are times where they will ask you to go and, see if you can work things out, and it's not like you go to court and then they are granting you a divorce. So in that case, even if it is granted by a judge for the purposes of healing or, all of those things, how long can that be?
Well, let me clarify that point. The only ground for dissolving a marriage in Ghana is that the marriage has broken down beyond anything. In other words, nothing can be done about it.
Irreparable.
That is so. But then what it means in practical effect is that anytime that a judge has got any reason, mm-hmm. any suggestion mm-hmm. to show that the parties can be reconciled,
mm-hmm.
it is the duty, it's actually provided by the rules, the duty of the judge to ask the parties to go and endeavor to settle their differences
mm-hmm.
with or without whatever help. I mean, and that is not legal separation in the sense of the law. In other words, the request by a judge to parties to go and resolve their differences with the help of whoever, it's not separation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the separation.
I understand
even
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The proper separation is the judge making an order
yeah.
that go and live apart for reasons A, B, C,
D.
And for those reasons, either the man or the woman must do this and do that and provide this.
Now, in this instance,
yes.
if the judge issues such an order,
yes,
how long can it be for?
There's no time limit.
It can go for as long as 5 years?
It could be more, even more.
And that is not a divorce situation?
It's not.
So for as long as that order has been given, for whatever reason,
uh-huh.
you are not allowed to be seeing another person.
No. It's not the judge who asks you not to do this or not to do that. Common sense dictates. In other words, you are still within the marriage.
So you can't do it. That's what I just want us to establish.
No, you can't do it like the law places a ban on you. But sense dictates.
But you're still married to the person.
That's the point I'm making.
So the law even places an injunction
on
you,
I'm just talking
it?
About this in the context of what husbands and wives do, whether a judge has spoken or has not spoken. So effectively, I recognize the point that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
But the real point that I want to establish is that anything short of the separation by a court of law is still marriage.
Okay.
In other words, the judge did not even educate you. The judge did not tell you anything.
Exactly.
Because you are still within the context of a marriage. And what it means, for instance, is that, of course, if you go away from the court and you do anything else which aggravates the existing situation, that would rather stampede the dissolution of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I would put it.
Pencil, so just clarify this for me simply. If you are not divorced,
mm-hmm.
like properly divorced,
yes,
and it is even an issue of a court separation or a court order for you to be separated for whatever reason, you can't be dating anybody else. You can't.
No.
Okay. So that's the point.
Dating is adultery.
Now, let me
That will aggravate this. The situation. Because adultery is a specific ground for dissolution of a marriage.
Okay. How about the situation where you have started the divorce process and everybody knows that this is going to end in a divorce, but then it's a process and you haven't completed the process and you look around and you find somebody you're interested in. Can you start seeing that person pending the divorce?
The answer is no. In other words, whatever you do aggravates an already existing situation.
Oh, no. The situation there is leading to divorce already.
That is so. I know. But like I'm saying, good sense will not encourage you to do that. I know in practical people do a lot of things.
Exactly.
But we are talking of it within the context of law. Even from the Christian perspective, it's still not good because irrespective of the fact that the marriage has not been dissolved, whatever you do is adultery, even from Christian perspective. It does not matter. So that is what I would say, both in the context of the law and even the context of religion.
Okay, so I am asking these questions because, like I said, someone sent us a mail.
Yes.
Right? And in that mail, she said they had been separated. Yes. I am not sure now whether it is the court that ordered them to be separated, but they have been separated for like 5 years.
Yes.
They don't live together.
Yes.
However, they are not divorced.
Yes.
And after 5 years, she doesn't see them coming back together. She's seen some. She's met somebody, and they have formed a good relationship. And you know, they are dating.
Right.
It's just that, I mean, you can't come out with it. And her concern is to find out if if ever the husband finds out or the man finds out that she is seeing somebody, could that be a grounds for her losing what she's entitled to even during the divorce? Because she knows that this thing is going to end in a divorce anyway. But could that be a grounds for her losing her entitlements, like maybe her part of the property and all that, if eventually the divorce goes through?
No, it cannot be, and I will explain. The real danger she faces is if she were to die today, whatever properties that she's got would descend in order of inheritance and other stuff like that to the husband, who is on record as a husband. That's the real danger that a lot of these couples they face, which is the marriage is practically dissolved, if I may put it that way, though the law holds it intact. Yeah. The real danger these people run is if any one of them were to die, then all the rules of testacy and intestacy will begin to apply. The law will not recognize the fact that they had living even with that new man or the new woman. The law does not recognize that. The law has personally been involved in this kind of things in court and in church and whatever. And all that the husband or the wife has to do is to go to court, for instance, to apply for letter of administration to govern your estate. And that would be it. I mean, irrespective of the fact that you are living with another man, another woman, to the knowledge of the whole world, the law doesn't recognize those relationships. I mean, especially if it's an ordinance marriage. Because, you know, in the context of customary marriage, people can fabricate all kind of things like, I mean, whatever that they had dissolved. But in an ordinance marriage can only be dissolved by a court of law. So when you are living an ordinance marriage and a court of law has not made a pronouncement, then your law is for all purposes, to all intents and everything, recognized by the law as being in existence. So that's the real danger. But like the other situations that you talked about, that you are living at, people do it and we know it.
Yeah.
And of course, in the eyes of the law, you cannot lose any benefit that you are entitled to in the law, except that our laws on dissolution of marriage is essentially fault-finding. In other words, every dissolution of marriage has to end up on one person's petition or the counter-petition or the cross-petition, which means that the court will find, and that will only count in terms of damages that the court would award. Don't forget that any time that you go to court, the court wants to find out whose conduct has necessitated this unfortunate end, and the court will express its appreciation or lack of it in terms of the award of legal costs, but to not affect your substantive rights, like property rights and all of that, to not affect it at all.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Now, the following follow up to this. So, in another situation where we've spoken about prenups and things here in the studio before, but this is not a prenup situation. You're married to somebody, right? In the course of the marriage, you acquired...
But prenups don't work in Ghana, so go on.
So you acquired properties.
Yes.
And you know, at the time where the love is at the peak of it, you are... And so you probably are doing the documentations, and then you tell the man that, you know what, you are the man. You know, a typical submissive wife, lead and let me follow. So because you are the man and the husband, you can use your name on all the properties and all that. It's fine. Like, I am your wife and I respect your leadership. So that is done on love and affection and respect, which happens a lot. And then some way, somehow, this man, because you people probably have issues in the marriage, but you are not divorced, and he's bitter. So he wills the properties to probably his family members and other things, and then he passes on. Is there anything you can do about it?
There are a lot of things that any party affected by such a situation can do. Now, the operative rule and the practice in Ghana is not so much the party in whose name a property is, so much as the fact that whether the property was acquired during the subsistence of the marriage, that's one. And two, whether from the relationship, the way they conducted their affairs in terms of acquisition of properties, whether there was an intention expressly demonstrated through their conduct as to whether each of them sought to acquire properties in his or her own name as separate from joint property. In the instance that you're talking about, where possibly there was only one property that was acquired during the course of the marriage and the property was in the name of the man, the woman does not even need so much to lead evidence to demonstrate that she gave money or she whatever gave to the man. The position of law now is quite clear that properties that are acquired in the course of the marriage belong to both parties, unless there's a contrary intention that must be shown. As for instance, the evidence that while the man was acquiring the property, the woman was also acquiring property in her own name and stuff like that. But now the law is pretty clear and pretty certain. And the rule is now, on the basis of equity. In other words, what is the contribution that the court can find during the subsistence of the marriage as to the relative contributions that each party made to the acquisition of the property? That is the operative rule now. Whatever the position of law was, previously it was substantial contribution and so forth and so on. Now, as a rule, properties acquired in the course of the marriage, irrespective of whoever's name the property is kept, because it has been the tradition and the custom of this country that properties are typically put in the name of the man, and whether the woman made a contribution or not. But even now, if we have a property which is in the name of the man, there's a clear demonstration that the woman possibly did not even make a financial contribution to it. Now, the courts have ways of looking at the marriage relationship, the contribution, not only in terms of money, because we know for a fact that a lot of women in this country because they are bearing the children, they are looking after the children, they can only do petty. Many women in this country, that's the way, and the court has now taken account of all of that. Because it's not just economic contribution that makes a home. So now the courts are looking at all of that as a basis for classifying properties acquired in the course of marriage as joint property.
Great.
So that's the way it is now.
Okay, so that's clarified.
Yes.
You can't just get up and be willing.
No.
Willing things. You can do it, but as to whether it will work, another issue.
But we're talking about will. Let me even make this other thing. Now, there is something the law calls reasonable provision. Assuming, for the sake of even our argument, that it was, quite apart from the issue of joint properties and whatever. Now, a man in particular, I say man because let me talk to you about the social reality. You can't even make a will and leave out, for instance, your spouse. Leave it out. Even if there's clear evidence that it was your joint property and I intended to be so. Your self-acquired property and there was every evidence that intended to be so. The law will now always, it is part of rules of testacy that the court has power to open up a man's will, not only a man, a spouse's will, but because it always applies to men in practice,
know, right?
Let me talk about it. Open up the will and make what we call reasonable provision for a spouse and children who are
under
age.
Left out.
That is so. So, when you make a will, there must be good reason. The first rule is that the court never wants to interfere with a person's will. But the law makes provision for what the law calls reasonable provision, which can be made out of a man's will for his spouse and children.
Mm.
Yes.
Great. So no fears, eh?
No fear, no fears for the woman now.
The lady who said
now the men are not fearing now. Now yeah, men are on a serious threat, you know.
So she that particular email, she says that the man's been threatening her. You know, that you think you are somebody, right? Don't worry. When eventually I finish preparing my will and you realize that you have no place in it, you know, so
tell the man that you should go and read what we call reasonable provision. But that the reasonable provision is even an aside. Now the real issue is that you can't have a, unless there's clear evidence to demonstrate that in the course of the marriage, a pattern was established where the woman was working on her own and acquiring things on her own, and the man was also on his own acquiring things on his own. I mean, because seriously speaking, there's clear evidence that the woman has acquired this and this in her own name, and the man has also acquired something in his name, then the evidence may be really strong for the court to disturb a man's will or a woman's will for that matter. Otherwise, now it's joint property.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, someone is asking when you can start sending the names. Like yesterday, the announcement I made about the honeymoon.
Oh, right.
You can send it now and just hashtag Home Affairs Honeymoon. That's it. So just send it now so that we will be able to fish them out and get back to you. And now let me move on. We still have questions to ask, but I have some coming in. So let's address some of the specific questions that our audience are asking. This one says, ask the lawyer if it is possible to convert an ordinance into customary marriage. If not, what else can I do? I think I didn't really give it a deep thought before going into it. I have been married for almost 20 years now. Oh, wow.
The opposite is true. The opposite
but
can
the
be
reverse
done.
Is not.
You're very right. A customary marriage can always be converted into an ordinance marriage. The law, the legal expresses conversion. But an ordinance marriage can, under no circumstance, be converted into a customary marriage.
It's as simple as that.
That is so.
Oh, my God. I mean... Look, he says that he didn't really give it a deep thought and he's been married for 20 years. For you to be thinking this means that something is going on. Maybe you can let us help with a counselor who may be able to talk you into seeing the beauty in your marriage other than, you know, wanting
yeah,
to
yeah, but
do
before then, you see, I don't know what really is thinking of that makes him think that if he had a customary
maybe
marriage,
he wants to marry another one.
Well, apart from that, there's no other advice because everything that I've said applies to customary marriage as well as ordinance marriage. And whatever he's talking about, apart from possibly the desire to marry a second woman, I mean, there could be no other advantage that an ordinance marriage a customary marriage you cannot get from it, like somebody who's married under the ordinance.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Listening to Home Affairs, and I just heard about, my honeymoon surprise. Okay, I've told you what you can do, right? So send your name and the name of the person getting married and hashtag Home Affairs Honeymoon, and then we will fish it out and then we will call you and hopefully the person you're nominating gets to go to Lou Moon. I'll be telling you a bit about Lou Moon to even whet your appetite the more. Okay. Lawyer Pencil, now let me ask this. How do I take custody of my kids in a divorce situation? I know that's a very broad one.
You're right. No, it's not how you, but because it is part, you see, the thing about a divorce or divorce proceedings is
let me ask this, first of all, who is eligible to have custody of the children in any divorce situation?
Either party.
Okay.
But
there will be considerations, right?
Naturally. Okay. The consideration normally, I mean, when we talk about child, we're talking about child. And especially when they're up to teenage years, the pattern has always been that the court would favor a woman's request for custody over that of a man, unless there's clear evidence of the woman's, I don't know, irresponsibility or something like that. But the pattern, the clear pattern is that the court would normally grant custody of children to the wife with visitation rights to the man.
Okay.
But there have been few situations where the court, you ever have that Dr. Beckley, you mm-hmm. remember Dr.
Yes,
Beckley,
yes,
that Dr. Beckley, his yeah. case, Beckley versus Beckley, it's a reported case. And in that case, it was one of the exceptions because it mm-hmm. appeared the woman had become a woman of the night. And the man went to court on the basis of that allegation that by reason of the woman's whatever new occupation, she could not have time for the children. And that was the main basis upon which the court granted the custody of the children to the man. But typically, custody will always go to a woman. And for a man to be able to establish a case for custody to be given to him, he must demonstrate that under the Ghanaian context, within the Ghanaian context, the woman is not
capable
your typical woman. That's it. But you know, there are custody is a very funny thing. You know, it's not only the parents that can have custody. Mm. Sometimes, because the primary concern for custody is the welfare of the children, not the parents.
Yeah.
The welfare. And therefore, it sometimes happens that even though people, I mean, a couple have got a child, the child may be living with somebody else for all these number of years. Maybe the child, I'm talking their grandparents and stuff like that. And if the court has got reason to see or know that removing the children from a particular environment, don't forget that where they live, they go to school, they form association, they've got all kinds of, relationships and stuff like that. If the court has got reason to know that removing them from that environment may affect them one way or the other, the court will maintain that environment, and custody will not necessarily go to the parents by mere reason that they are parents. The court may end up granting a divorce, making an order for custody for the children to be kept in the environment where they have been for the past maybe 2, 3, 4 years preceding the marriage, because that's where the court finds they are comfortable, they are well rested and stuff like that. So custody is not just about parents.
Parenting.
It's about whoever has custody of them. At the time of the marriage, the court will look at how long they've been there, how well
they've been taken care of,
so,
and their well-being.
That is so. Okay. So that's the primary concern about custody. It's not about the parents, it's about the children and their welfare.
Can the children decide where they want to be or who they want to be with?
In most custody battles, sometimes the court takes the view of the children in camera. They talk the court. Don't forget that in this custody battle, the court normally serves the social welfare. The social welfare department. The courts work together with them in these kind of things, and they have got the science of making a determination as to where the child's best place would be. So sometimes it involves taking the children, camera, speaking to examining them. I've never been involved in any litigation where the social welfare had to come in this kind of time. I wouldn't even know the questions that they ask them, but I believe since it's their area of expertise, they know what kind of answers that children give to them that will signify or signal some danger or some comfortability and stuff like that.
Okay.
But there's a science for dealing with that aspect of that matter. Yes.
Lawyer Pencil, from your experience, have you ever, been in a situation or seen one where a total injunction is placed on one of the parents not to visit the children or not to see them?
I know of such cases, though. Your question puts it, what is in my own experience, like I was handling the kid. The answer is no. But I know
of
that.
Such cases.
Am I right? Because
what would have been the reason?
No, some people, I was going to say some men, but I'm checking myself.
People
of ungovernable temper. Ungovernable. Some people are very terrible. Like for instance, if there has been a record of, some people, they don't even have to beat a child. They will beat you,
right?
And take your skin off your body.
I know.
And such people are a danger to themselves. And the threats that they make when they make all of these kind of things, and sometimes it's, the true problem about Ghana is that the social welfare system is not really the best. I'm talking about custody. You know, sometimes the elsewhere, children even have to be taken from a particular environment totally and completely and so forth and so on. But to answer your question, I've known of a few instances where parents or either parent is banned completely from relating to a child in any particular, because they make threats. And if you joke with their threats, by the next time, you'll be picking a dead body.
That's true.
You know why? So the social welfare system is quite robust, but it's not very effective because what supports the system itself is most often not available.
Okay.
Because, yes, so.
I have a final question on this one before we move on. So, custody issues, like you rightly use the adjective, is usually a battle.
Yeah.
But if I am learning from you and hearing you right, you also did mention that in this part of our world, usually from childhood till about the teenagers, usually custody is given to the woman.
Yes.
Now, there are cases or there are instances where the woman is very eligible to take care of the children and make sure that the children are well, their well-being is very much considered. You look at the man too, yes, he also is able. So what usually brings about the battle? Why can't the children be with their mother and, you know, they're taking good care of their father visits and you have a relationship? Or why can't they just simply be with daddy and then mommy can visit and then you have a... Why is there always a battle? Like, I just want to understand from you, because you have handled cases, you have been in these situations. What usually brings about a battle? Not in cases where maybe we can tell that one of the parents is not eligible, but in this case, they are both eligible. So why are they fighting?
I'll tell you that when you get into our course, doctor, you marvel at how the judges use their discretion and judgment and stuff like that. But it's got more of a social problem than a legal issue. You know, when people are going through divorce, I mean, like you said, you know, I sat in court and I've always asked and I've wondered whether indeed either parent thinks that if the child gets to the other, that one will wake up in the night, pick a knife, and kill the child.
I just understand.
I mean, it's totally unbelievable when you find yourself in court. And I think it's got more to do with the social problem of the parent. Because don't forget that they are going through themselves a crisis of a sort, which nobody really recognizes. And then everybody tries to make the excuse to paint the other, the real devil, that the person is or is not, and so forth and so on. And how the judges eventually make a decision, I mean, I've always marveled. I'll tell you very honestly. I mean, because I've been in court and seen parties and the way they want to paint the other, if they really are the pictures that they paint, then they will not even be able to fit into the court. But, I mean, it's a good question that you ask, and I'll tell you that it's a social issue. It's got more social issue. And, you know, here, I'm sorry, even though we've got all the experts and what's psychological and social and so forth and so on, I think that the game is played by each parent trying to paint the other, the real devil that the person is or ought to be, and that if the child was left in the custody of the other. But as a rule, in the kind of situation I described, courts will hesitate always to give children, especially females, even to their fathers, because of this new phenomenon of abuse, and there's no distinction now between, I mean, even parents, I mean, their own fathers and stuff like that. So the courts have always concluded that it is safer. I mean, if they have to make a bet, it is safer to leave the children with the mothers. And like I said, the woman really has to be irresponsible, really irresponsible with clear evidence. But the difficulty I myself sometimes have come across is neither parent is ready to live with a child. They want to take the child and give to their
somebody.
that kind of thing. That is where the problem really arises, because the woman, by reason of her whatever position and stuff, she herself cannot have the time. And then she wants the children only to give to her parents. And the man also begins to make the same argument. It's God has been a good parent as you are. But interestingly, the court will always come to some form of conclusion. Like I said, according to the law, taking the best case, I mean, the best interest of the child, I mean, into consideration. That's always. And that will always depend on the facts and the evidence that are made available to the court. And typically, the court will make the social welfare department do some background checks and stuff like that and present reports to the court on the basis of which the court to make that decision.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you. And it's very interesting when you hear some of these things. And yes, the bit about the fact that it's not like they want to keep their children.
That is so.
You know, sometimes too, I think it's, or I don't know if you know about that, that sometimes it's the fear of you're going to be with another person and I am not sure how they will treat my child.
Right.
You know, and all.
Right.
All
that's a social reality.
Issues. Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Social reality.
Okay, there's a question here. I'll ask you, but I will come back to take the answer. It says we are married. My husband acquired a property, and has warned me not to step a foot into that property. He said it's his family property. He's given it to his mother, and I am not part of their family. He said he will not work on any property with me. What will the law say about that? Lawyer Pencil, I'll come back in a little while to take your answers on that. You're still tuned into Home Affairs right here on Joy 99.7 FM. We are discussing your marriage and the law. Very interesting lessons we're picking right here in the studio with lawyer Kwiku Yamua Pencil. Now, the rich taste of Dano milk makes a perfect combination for your tea, your oat, your gari soakings, your cocoa, and all the others. It gives you that great taste you've always desired. Dano milk is rich and a very rich source of natural protein and fortified with vitamin A. It has several other vitamins and essential nutrients that keeps you nourished and healthy every day. Dano milk is also rich in proteins, iodines, vitamin B12, calcium, and milk is natural. It comes in different variants. Talk about the Dano milk cool cow or plain powdered milk, Dano milk coffee 3-in-1, Dano milk chocolate 3-in-1, and Dano evaporated milk. Dano milk is affordable and in a shop near you. Choose a tasty milk, choose nourishment, choose Dano milk. Dano milk, go for it. Are you ready for a blast of your lifetime? Get ready to be part of the newest and ultimate game show on Joy Prime this April. Family Arena is fun, tricky, diverse, and hilarious, and it will blow your mind. Join the train and win cash and amazing prizes. To participate, send your family name and first names of your team members to our WhatsApp number 0551575757. Number again is 0551575757 for details. Family Arena coming soon on Joy Prime, your ultimate TV experience. The joy of every parent is to see their children cheerful and happy. To achieve this desire, every parent needs to ensure that their children are given nutritious foods that has the essential nutrients and multivitamins which can promote their welfare. One of such nutritious beverages is Vitamilk soy milk drink. Vitamilk soy milk is made from natural soybeans, which is a good source of plant protein, vitamin B1 and B2. Vitamilk has no artificial coloring, no artificial flavorings, and no preservatives. And for over 20 years in Ghana, Vitamilk soy milk has been consistent with its product quality, sumptuous taste, and its vital nutritional benefits. So go and choose Vitamilk Champ for your children because it has plant protein and it is nutritiously amazing and also very satisfying. Vitamilk also comes in its regular soy milk drink, Vitamilk Energy, the multi-cereal with no caffeine. You can have it in Vitamilk Choco, Vitamilk Banana, Vitamilk Strawberry, and it also comes in the 250 ml and the 1 liter Tetra Pak. Vitamilk is indeed a nutritious beverage that feels good anywhere, anytime. Once again, thank you very much for staying tuned right here. We're studying a lot on the show this morning, your marriage and the law. Earlier on, I announced that we have our honeymoon packages for the next 4 weeks coming up. And so every week we are selecting one person who gets to win, you know, an all expense paid weekend stay or honeymoon. You know, it's not just an ordinary weekend stay, it's a honeymoon. And you know, honeymoons come with lots of things, and this is actually going to be on the moon at Blue Moon. And so you can send, if you have a, you know, a loved one who is getting married next week Saturday, you want to send their details to us. We need your number most importantly, and send it to 0551111997. And we will call you if you happen to be the winner. We will call you and we'll go through all the details with you until these people go to Blue Moon. I will be telling you a bit about Blue Moon so you know where they are going and how exciting it will be for them. Just hashtag it, honeymoon on Home Affairs, and then we will get back to you. Lea Pencil, I asked a question earlier. Na says that her husband, they've been married for a bit, her husband has acquired some property and has warned her never to go near the property. He says it's his family property and that he has given it to his mother, and she is not part of their family, so she can't go close to the property. And he has also said that he is not going to work on any joint property with her. What will the law say about her situation?
Question put me in thought, and first is the what the legal position, and two is what she can do practically about it. The first part of it is, as a matter of law, based on what I already said, this property is joint property, and it is only the equities that will determine whether she is 50% joint owner, 40%, 30%. But now the law is clearly settled that property that is acquired in the course of a marriage belongs to both property. That's the presumption. But like I'm saying, evidence, if all that I take is what is here, the woman is a joint owner of that property. Is the equities, the clear evidence that will come as her contribution and stuff like that, that will determine whether indeed she's 50% co-owner. And therefore, what it means is that the husband does not have the power. And if he has the power or he has exercised that power will be exercised subject to the law. In other words, the woman will be deemed to be a co-owner of that property, meaning that what he has done is certainly wrong. And the court will not hesitate if any action has to come before it for the court to make that declaration. The real issue is, what are the options, the practical options that are open to this woman? Mm-hmm. In other words, if she can count her chances, then obviously she can look on, and since the men always die before the woman.
Like, that's not fair.
I'm looking at the practical effect of seeking to exercise her right during the course of the relationship. Because you know, a lot of these things, it can only be brought consequent upon the dissolution of a marriage. You know, that is the funny thing about the law as it stands now. Because while the man is alive, I mean, I wouldn't know under what circumstance that you're going to court to ask the court to declare you joint owner and stuff like that. So, but it's the man who must be listening now that if, I mean, the first place, he cannot claim that the woman is not co-owner of the property. The law has changed, and it's about time that men understood. And even if people do these things and they hide it in the name of their parent and so forth and so on, before a court of law and a court of equity, it's not going to work. It's as simple as that. But that's a different ball game altogether from the practical effect, or rather the practical steps that the woman can take to have that kind of declaration made a court of law. Because this would certainly cannot happen in the course of, if I may put it in quote, a healthy, marriage relationship.
Mm.
And that's the catch in all of these situations. But the man ought to know that if the woman of God dies before him, he can have a safe distance. But if any time, my problem is that if you're not careful, you're going to end your marriage on such issues.
Mm.
I mean, that's the real problem. And unfortunately, the way our law is couched now makes these reliefs only as part of a divorce, matter in court. Mm. I mean, that's the difficulty about the state of the law now. So the woman is in a catch, whatever situation. But the law is what I've pronounced, which is that by law, she's a co-owner of that property.
All right.
How she realizes that dream in her lifetime is another matter.
Oh, dear. Lawyer Fatal. Okay. We have another... this one says that... Okay, my brother-in-law is divorced. They have an 8-year-old son who the woman has custody of. The boy is in the same school as my son. The boy comes to school by the bus. But every time there is a public holiday, the boy wants to live with her auntie, which is my wife. Could the father have asked for custody for her sister? My wife drives to drop and pick my son daily. My wife sometimes have to hide because... he sometimes joins her home and will have to take him in the evening. Do you get it?
I'm wondering what the question is about.
So the question is that this man says that his brother-in-law is divorced. And
yes.
They have an 8-year-old son. And his wife has custody of the son. That's his ex-wife.
That is so.
Now, they are in the same school with this man's child.
That is so.
Now, the boy comes to school by bus. However, every time there is a holiday or there is no school, the boy wants to live with his auntie, which is this person sending
that
the messages. So the question is that, could the man have asked for custody for the sister?
The auntie
that this boy loves to be with all the time?
On occasions. You know, what court makes orders, they are not cast in stone. Those orders can always be varied. And therefore, if for instance, but from what the way it has been worded, it does not appear to me that there's a problem yet.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
But
if it was, then they can ask the court to vary the order to make it possible for the boy to visit the auntie or the uncle's wife.
It just seems like he has a favorite auntie. And if ever there is the opportunity to be with that auntie, would want to be with
that
auntie.
Yeah, because there's no issue.
Problem.
There's no issue. Yeah.
Now, so Lawyer Pencil, in a divorce situation, who is entitled to an alimony?
To alimony?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question you ask. Alimony, pendant litty, that is pending the litigation and final, what do you call
Lawyer
it?
Lawyer Pencil, why are you so excited about this
I'm excited because it always goes to the woman. You hardly hear of it. No, there have been a few instances where the man got alimony and it puts me to laughter because there was ever a case where the parties for that shall remain nameless. But the man was a professor in the university. The wife was with a banker, was making a lot of money, far more money. But, you know, it's kind of, I mean, an automatic thing that the woman will always put in an application for alimony. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the woman did that. So when as part of the alimony pending litigation or whatever, the court will ask the parties to file what we call an affidavit of means. Affidavit of means is essentially an affidavit in which the party is required to make a full disclosure as your sources of income, how you spend your money, or rather the expenditure that you make over a period. The idea is for the court to find on the evidence what kind of money is available to either party, and because no court can make an order for alimony of any kind without knowing the party's means of income sources and stuff like that. So we had this kind of case where obviously the man being a university lecturer, you can just tell from his name, whatever, then the lady was working with a bank. So we then apply for alimony
for the man,
for the woman. Okay. We work for the man. And, you know, funnily enough, the woman was, I mean, because the man was my friend before we took out the matter. So I gave it to another colleague in the firm. So I wanted to present myself as not being involved in the divorce matter. So the woman called me and said, that my friend, what is in his head? Because the man was asking for her to support him. The man said to me, what is wrong with my friend? I said, you, that is hitting you now, you're saying? Because on the evidence, the woman was working in a bank, well paid. Her salary was about 3 times that of her husband. And she had rather put the application.
The woman is asking, he doesn't know that you are part of the
problem. Of course. And then really gave it to another colleague. I asked him, I was a good friend to both of them. And that's the only reason why I could not rear my head directly. But in the eventually, in the long run, she abandoned her application. Of course, the man was also not pushing, really. But I'm just trying to make the point that in a
proper... So who was granted or nobody?
No, eventually, the woman, she didn't push her application. She didn't push with it.
Okay.
So the court did not have to make a determination. But that was a clear case. If really the man wanted to be mean, I would use mean. Because prior to that, the man was living on his own. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But then if you say you want alimony pending litigation or whatever, then you need to... I mean, quite clearly, how can you get a man to make this merely because you were a wife when you were earning about 3 times more than him?
Mm.
You work with a financial institution, and obviously. So the first point I want to make is that alimony is founded on need.
Okay.
Support.
So it's not just that because you're divorced.
No. You must demonstrate that because I have these 3 or 4 number of children I have to look at. Typically, the custody is with the woman. Typically, the custody is with the woman. And of course, once the relationship gets into that burn, then what it means is that the man also don't feel like, I mean, supporting you or bringing you whatever. I don't know why we always go through that kind of burn. But because, I'm sorry, but this is a social reality that in Ghana, a lot of men believe that the woman, I don't know, but the men are not willing to assist half of them. With due respect, I'm sorry, but I need to put it that in this country, men are more irresponsible when it comes to the maintenance, welfare, and whatever of their children. There are many, many men who are having children without regard. I mean, they just walk off. And the women are compelled in all kinds of situations. And it isn't easy to high society. I'm talking about educated men, educated women.
Mm.
And the men have the children. And when they go through this patch, they think that they don't owe the wife
anything, any
responsibility and stuff like that. Other than that, there will be no need at all for even these things to come to court. But being as they are, when they come to court, the court has to find a basis. And like I'm saying, I mean, a legal basis for justification for whatever decisions they make. So simply, it's based on need, which must be established on the evidence that this number of children, this one goes to this school, this one goes to this school, this one goes, these are the fees. On the average, every man has spent so much on these children and so forth and so on. And having regard to ABC, sometimes even rent, all of them, they are factored. And then the court wants to look at the means of the parties and determine the contribution that each party must bring for the period that the matter is in court. That's what we call alimony pending litigation. That is the pending litigation. Then when at the end,